This is a True Crime Today, Hidden Killers Investigation Special, the murder of Dr. John Forsythe. Tony Brewski shares a raw, unfiltered conversation with John's brother, Richard Forsythe, as a family seeks justice.
Richard Forsythe is joining us. He's the brother of Dr. John Forsythe, who was found dead in Beaver Lake in Arkansas earlier this year of a single gunshot wound. Very mysterious case that, as of right now, feels a little bit cold. We haven't heard anything new out of investigators. Richard, number one, condolences on everything that you and your family have been going through and the loss of your brother. I cannot imagine the pain that you all must be continuing to feel as this continues to drag on. Richard, take me back to earlier times when you and your brother began that business together. This is a man that, from all accounts, crazy hard worker, even has his camper on the lot at the hospital he worked at, where he sounds like somebody really worked his butt off. Is that a fair assessment?
That was something that a lot of people complained about. I mean, it was said of him that he was working 80, 100 hours a week regularly, and sometimes more somehow. I don't know how. Yeah, he worked a lot.
Yeah. With that being said, him working quite a bit, you guys, from what I understand, take me to the beginning of this business you guys set up. How far back did the crypto business begin, and what kind of inspired you guys to go down that route?
Well, there's a long version of that story and a short one. I'll go with the short one, and you can kind of ask for expansion if you want. But we started talking about digital currency in 2007. Mm-hmm. We were involved in a business. We had created some software for banks in the payment systems industry to help maximize debit card returns for banks. So for banks that are issuing debit cards, we had some software and a novel approach for improving their revenue model. Mm-hmm. And in our conversations with payments systems experts, we got into the conversation of where payment systems were going. And the conversation of digital currencies arose, and he and I started exploring that space, and we started devising an idea for a digital currency around 2007. We began programming 2008. We had a beta test 2009, and then Bitcoin came out. And at first, we thought Bitcoin was pretty goofy. But, and I still maintain that its early iterations were goofy, but then they made some key alterations, and that sold us that they were the right platform. And so even though we'd spent well over $1 million in what we were working on at the time, we dumped it. Mm-hmm. And we pivoted to the cryptocurrency space, and we started working in that market, developing services and products and just getting involved. We're at the first cryptocurrency conferences. We met all the current, you know, tech giants and people who started the cryptocurrency space. And we just got really involved. And over time, you know, we devised several ideas, many of which didn't work out. We actually tried to start a cryptocurrency exchange, found the regulatory landscape to be challenging, and also a lot of the technical issues to be very challenging. And we started a business where we sold cryptocurrency that was attached to actual precious metals. So kind of a combination of precious metals and cryptocurrency. That didn't work out in the long run. And so ultimately, we ended up starting our own cryptocurrency because we felt like the cryptocurrencies we were seeing in the market were not delivering on the original promise, on the original idea. And so, and probably the biggest issue with cryptocurrency that we saw at that time, and I still see this as a problem, is broad-based distribution. Not enough people are using cryptocurrency to make it really legit, to make it palatable to the masses and to businesses and to government. And so we feel like the biggest challenge facing cryptocurrency is broad-based usage. And so we designed Onfo to be come a cryptocurrency that is very broadly used, especially in the third world. We felt like there was nobody in the cryptocurrency space that was addressing the involvement of the third world, and that we have always felt since the beginning that cryptocurrency was designed for them. Mm-hmm. It was designed to liberate them. It was designed to lift them up and to give them inclusion into modern finance, into the modern world. So we envisioned Onfo as a philanthropic concept. We never really had a profit model. It should be said that probably sounds naive to certain cryptocurrency people. The truth is that when a cryptocurrency becomes very big, very widely used, then it becomes inherently valuable. And so anybody involved in such a program will have revenue streams. But we never got to that. And we certainly didn't have a short-term revenue model. We weren't flipping or dumping or any of that kind of stuff. We never sold anything to anybody. We were very squeaky clean when it came to regulatory compliance stuff. And our mission, the way we understood it, was that if we succeed on a broad base, great. But if not, until then, we'll be putting groceries on the tables of lots of poor folks. Mm-hmm. And that really drove us.
Putting groceries on the table of a lot of poor folks, are you talking in third world countries, as you just mentioned, folks who really could use this? Is that the direction of where it was going and what was going on with it in those early days?
Absolutely. And we had big growth in a number of countries, Indonesia, Bangladesh, all throughout Africa, Ukraine before the war started. Things got a little bit strange when the war started, but we still maintained operations there. And we still had a lot of people who were using our system and helping it to grow. A lot of other places around the world that are not coming up to, Philippines was big. Mm-hmm. A lot of places around the world. And especially we noticed with the feedback and the communications we got, it was particularly popular with people who were struggling financially. And so we had a lot of testimonials, people writing in saying, you know, they're really grateful for what we did for them. They only participated for a couple of weeks, but it got them $20. Mm-hmm. And that made us feel really great. And it motivated us. It really drove us in our work and in our investments. And for me and for JR, my brother, he was often referred to as JR, John Robert Forsyth. We were just so excited about what we were doing and about the impact we were having for people, hundreds of thousands of people. You know, you could live your whole life and work at any variety of jobs, and some of which you may have the luxury of believing in. Mm-hmm. You know, you may actually have the luxury of feeling like what you're doing means something. JR and I worked a lot of different jobs, did a lot of different things. We never found anything that gave us more meaning than that. And so, yeah, we were very driven by the philanthropic angle.
When you were in that philanthropic angle of this, what time was this in the timeline of things, but what year was this going on at?
2019, January 1st to the day he died.
While this is going on, you obviously, you work with a lot of different people. I'm assuming people in other countries as well to get this off the ground into the place where you got it. I have to ask, as you know, we've learned about your brother and his claims of being kidnapped about a year prior to his murder. I believe you had mentioned in an interview once that it might have been related somewhat, in some way, shape, or form, to the world of cryptocurrency. Can you expand upon that a little bit more? Does that have to do with what you guys were doing with working with other countries and maybe some bad actors getting mixed in? Or was it something else into the just that world? For most of us, we're very unfamiliar with, you know, any of it, to be quite honest.
Excuse me. The first time I ever heard about this kidnapping story was the day that my brother went missing on May 21st of this year. I had no knowledge of it whatsoever. And I have no firsthand knowledge of any of it, even to this day. All I have are third-party accounts. What I know about it, I truly wonder. I don't know if I know much at all. Mm-hmm. But I do know what was claimed through mutual acquaintance. And I'm saying this because the events we're describing are potentially dangerous. Mm-hmm. If they occurred, and especially as described, then the person who is privy to this information is potentially in danger. And so I'm keeping this person anonymous for that reason. So this mutual acquaintance has said to my face that he claimed that the kidnapping was cryptocurrency related. That's a very vague phrase. That's it. Some deal was struck. There was a claim that, well, first of all, he was forced into a car and taken to some location. Don't know how far of a drive it was. It was a bridge, apparently. His life was threatened. I think the life of his family was threatened, possibly acquaintances as well. This, I am aware that this is vague and that's frustrating. It's frustrating to me too.
Sure.
Also, It was claimed that these individuals had what he described as Eastern European accents. That's very vague. Could be wrong. They claimed that they were professionals. It wasn't personal. They were hired by another person. That's it. Other than that it was cold, that he was zip-tied, that he didn't want to talk much more about it because he was concerned that it could put people in danger if they knew anything more. I don't know why that would be the case. And furthermore, regarding this kidnapping story, a lot of the public have remarked in social media that they find it very odd and incredible that I don't know more. And yet that's the fact. That's just the way it is. I did not know. He did not tell me anything about this. If it was cryptocurrency related, it seems implausible that I am not in the line of fire or by proximity to him, that I am not somehow involved and in danger, but he didn't tell me.
Yeah.
And by not telling me, I find it difficult to believe that protects me whatsoever, but here we are. He didn't tell me anything. And so I found out about all this stuff on May 21st, 2023, when he was missing from his ER shift. And this is before we knew anything. This is before we knew that he had been taken, that he had been killed. So at this point, May 21st, 2023, I'm hearing this absolutely shocking and bizarre story. And I'm hoping and believing that he ran off, you know, he was in hiding or something. So that's it. That's all I know about the yeah. kidnapping. And that brings us to date. I found out that he was dead about a week after he was missing. And then it became a crime.
There's more to come in this True Crime Today Hidden Killers Investigation Special, The Murder of Dr. John Forsyth. Press subscribe so you don't miss any part of Tony's raw and open conversation with John's brother, Richard Forsyth, exclusively on the Hidden Killers podcast.